Hello, and welcome to the HMEB podcast. I'm your host, David Cuff, the executive editor of HME Business, your source for news, trends, and insights into the home medical equipment industry. Our COVID-19 coverage continues, this time taking a look at what oxygen providers can do to protect their respiratory staff and patients. Also, why it's critical to join industry efforts to convince Congress and CMS that now is not the time to be talking about competitive bidding, especially as it pertains to ventilators and other respiratory equipment and supplies.
I'm here today talking with Josh Parnas. He's the president of Adapt Health, a full-service HME provider headquartered in Plymouth Meeting, Pennsylvania. But they've got locations across 38 states. They're the third largest HME provider in the country and growing rapidly. And while they provide a full suite of products and services, Josh and I are talking specifically about how respiratory providers can deal with the COVID-19 pandemic. Josh, how are you doing?
Good. Thank you. Thank you for taking the time today.
Likewise. So, Josh, when we look at the sorts of respiratory services that you guys provide, maybe you can kind of give me a thumbnail description of the oxygen services and respiratory services that you guys provide.
Sure. So we provide, obviously, long-term oxygen therapy, portable oxygen concentrators, home ventilation, nebulizers, oxygen tanks and refills, as well as pediatric services as well, a small part of, but really a lot of our focus, as well as CPAP and BiPAP and a lot of supplies in that category. And that obviously is particularly, you know, relevant in you know, with the pandemic going on and COVID-19 with the respiratory services.
And what are some of the unique concerns when it comes to serving oxygen patients during COVID-19?
You know, from a concern perspective, I think, you know, you're always worried about employee safety, as well as how do you make sure some of these patients that both need oxygen because of COVID-19 and or patients that have unrelated COPD and maybe are negative for COVID-19, make sure they continue to get their life-sustaining equipment during what's, you know, what businesses are having operationally, very challenging times. And I think, you know, it takes on kind of multiple approaches, both from making sure that your patients, when they're going to, you know, making sure your patients are serviced, but when your employees and your drivers and techs are going to patients' homes, that they're wearing proper protection and taking universal precautions, as well as screening patients as much as you can by phone prior to doing delivery. Really, it's our customer service reps calling all these patients before we actually go to their home, understanding and asking a number of questions around, have they traveled? Were they exposed to any COVID patients? Are they feeling any symptoms? And as you know, with COVID, some of the challenges around it, and I think why cities and states and particularly our countries have struggling to contain it is because some people may not show any symptoms and still be positive, or may not show symptoms for a number of days and potentially spread it to other people. So what we're doing is, and it wasn't an easy feat, but really our procurement team did a really good job of really trying to secure as much personal protective equipment as they could, especially for our delivery techs and our drivers that are patient-facing and our clinicians or our liaisons in hospitals that are patient-facing to really address and assume that in today's world, with the pandemic spread, that patients may or potentially do have COVID and have to be dealt with in terms of universal precaution. So, you know, people understand that people have been very accommodating to our drivers as they come in with protective equipment. But we also realize at the same time that we're still providing a very needed and life, sometimes life-sustaining type of services. And as an essential business, we all have, really in our industry, we have a responsibility to step up during these times. And as much as, you know, my shout out and our team's shout out goes to not just our employees, but really employees across the HME industry and the home care industry that are stepping up to do their part to both help people continue to get access to healthcare in their home, and make sure that in spite of the fact that, you know, sometimes 80% of businesses are not operating in certain areas of the country, that we still could continue to provide services that people really need.
If you could, maybe you could give me a thumbnail description of, you know, how vulnerable your respiratory patients or respiratory patients in general are when it comes to COVID-19.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a physician, but again, I'm reading and hearing some of the same things that you're seeing, and we're seeing this particularly with people that have COPD or CHF or even some lung diseases. Yeah, it's particularly challenging because COVID essentially, in certain scenarios, attacks the lungs and creates a pneumonia situation that sometimes the body's not able to get itself out of. And what I think is particularly interesting about kind of the business that we're in or the industry that we're in, you know, outside of the business side of it, really it's the human side of we're really now as an industry, I think, transformatively thrust to the front lines of the fight against COVID. And I say that because we as an Adapt Health, particularly being up here in the Northeast in Plymouth Meeting, we also have large locations in New York. We're the largest player in New York City, and we've been at the front lines of dealing with a lot of the hospital systems that are now unfortunately overwhelmed there with the amount of cases that are coming in. And you know, really what we're seeing is where we can be proactive, where patients come in with maybe just needing supplemental oxygen, to a certain extent getting them out of the hospital or getting to them to a home, where if all they need is supplemental oxygen, and now that Medicare has relaxed the coverage guidelines on short-term oxygen, being able to get patients out of the hospital on oxygen into their home as quickly as possible to be able to free up that bed for a patient that may need a ventilator or may need to be intubated, God forbid. Those are the situations that we as an industry are now getting a lot more kind of recognition, and even think self-recognition about how important we are in terms of the overall, you know, healthcare continuum. I think, you know, a lot of us have to look in the mirror and say, hey, we have a real responsibility here to be a key part of the healthcare system. And that's something that we're actively doing, and the team has really responded phenomenally.
Bearing that in mind, I'm curious, have your referring physicians, when it comes to your respiratory patients, have they been inquiring with you about the steps that you're taking to reduce transmission and protect patients and those sorts of things? I'm wondering if they're you know, working with you in kind of a collegial fashion.
Yes, I mean we deal with a lot of different physicians across the spectrum, but vis-a-vis respiratory, particularly pulmonologists. Pulmonologists are right now kind of being called to the front lines of COVID, as because it's a disease, typically when it gets severe in the respiratory system, they're being asked to step up and make sure any patients with any severe symptoms are getting proper treatment and diagnosis about how advanced or how serious the lung condition might be. But really, I think the feedback that we've gotten from physicians that we work with is tremendous gratitude. Number one, that we're really being proactive in terms of both helping physicians adjust. And what I say when I say helping physicians adjust, I'm talking about a lot of physicians, at least up here in the Northeast, had to essentially close their practice to seeing patients. They didn't want to expose other patients to potential COVID instances. And as much as people needed things and as much as people, you know, needed care, a lot of physicians are really shifting into a telehealth mode. And we've helped some physicians really shift into that telehealth model. And we're really, you know, I think a lot of physicians were grateful both that we didn't really scale down our operation at all. We stepped up and we were more proactive in terms of communication about, hey, here's what we can do. We're going to both help your patients discharge from the hospital, or are there patients that you want to send us to the home to get oxygen set up so that we can be proactive to try to keep people out of the hospital in the first place.
You know, switching over from the patient protection, and going back to your staff safety concerns, I'm wondering, you know, were there kind of key groups that you're looking at when it comes to serving respiratory patients on your team that you're trying to protect? You know, is it the RTs that you work with? Is it the delivery staff? You know, who are the people that you really are looking at and going, okay, these are the team members that I've really got to make sure are okay, and here's what I'm doing to help them?
Yeah, so that's very interesting. I think at the early stages of when this started breaking out, and I'd say that it was about 2 weeks ago, particularly up in the Northeast, where, you know, we're really the leading edge of the knife as this thing penetrates into the U.S. We had to think about exactly the concerns that you said. How do we make sure we're protecting our team members that are on the front lines battling this? And also, how do we at the same time make sure that we don't have business interruption because we are so critical to the healthcare system? And I think hospitals, I think a lot of the critical care providers have been thinking about these things, but the way we were thinking about it was really non-essential staff in terms of non-patient facing staff. So people who are answering the phones, people who are doing the medical billing, people who are doing the back office documentation. We basically said, everybody, you have the option. If you want to work from home, you could work from home. And I think 75 to 80% of our employees took that option and said, hey, we're going to work from home. And thankfully, our technology team has always done a phenomenal job. But here, they really, really shone in the sense that, you know, employees were able to work from the same phone system that they're on in terms of picking up call queues from the patients. They're working on the same desktop environment as they do in the office because it's really everything's in the cloud. So they were able to shift to desktop as a service environment. And really, I'd say in the span of 24 hours, we basically shifted about 80% of our workforce that's non-patient facing to be able to work remotely in their homes. And yeah, it affects productivity somewhat, but to a certain extent, when you're on the same system as everybody, allowing people the flexibility and also a little bit more flexible hours to be able to get their work done has been really a godsend for us. I'd say that's number one. Number two, the things that we're most concerned about is the patient-facing employees. So patient-facing employees would be the clinicians, the liaisons that are working within hospital systems, and those are people really on the front lines that, you know, look in the mirror every day and say, hey, I'm doing this to make sure that people can get out of hospitals. We can free up beds. We can make sure patients that potentially I'm interacting with that have COVID. And that's why we have universal precautions and training around universal precautions and accreditation standards around those things. And all our front-end facing employees are very, very familiar with that in terms of, you know, I think it was more of a challenge really procuring a lot of that stuff. And I think that our purchasing team did a phenomenal job at really procuring a lot of the PPE equipment. You're talking about masks, you're talking about gloves, you're talking about hazmat, you know, materials and things like that, really to allow our people to be able to serve on the front lines and obviously not put them in harm's way. And really, my hat goes off really to a lot of those employees that are on the front lines and dealing with patients. It's tremendous self-sacrifice, and it's just these people are special.
I don't know what I'm more impressed with. Everybody's brave effort on the front line and you know, highly responsible effort on the front line, or the fact that you guys were able to transition 80% of your staff to teleworking in 24 hours. Given the size of that, that's huge. Both are just monumental lifts. I'm curious, going from the front lines to you know, the back end of the business, from a business management perspective, have you had some top line concerns regarding, you know, funding, reimbursement, you know, regulation, anything like that? Have there been some kind of key things that, you know, from a strategic standpoint, you are trying to make happen or want to see happen?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's something that we sent out an internal memo this week to our team, really to communicate with the members of Congress and really, you know, get asking for relief from CMS. And I think spot on to really what this challenge of COVID is really a respiratory issue. And I think that calling attention both to Congress and to CMS and saying, hey, like, this is, in my opinion, and a lot of doctors and clinicians' opinion, absolutely the wrong time to be talking about competitive bidding, specifically and you know, more broadly around respiratory categories. We're dealing with a respiratory emergency in this country. We see we are vastly short of resources, particularly on the ventilation side. And I want to call specific attention to that, because over the last week, really 2 weeks, and some of this has been really challenging, both having family up in New York City, and really dealing with what I think is really a human tragedy going on there of the hospital systems not having enough ventilators, not having enough capacity to deal with the onslaught of situation. But in terms of, like, if that's an area where healthcare needs to save a couple of dollars, do we really want to take vent providers and start putting that in competitive bidding now? Do we want to start saying, hey, we're paying a couple of dollars too much on high-end clinical and expensive equipment? Let's try to save a couple of dollars here, and that's how we're going to make healthcare better in the United States. Like, I just think that this specific situation is really calling attention for how we as an industry are an absolute integral part of the respiratory continuum of care, and cutting back providers and cutting back resources to providers that are on the front lines of this is I think just a mistake. And I think, you know, I would call out, and NOA Home Care and VGM are calling out to all providers to get in touch with your members of Congress, both to get relief on competitive bidding for respiratory categories. I think short term, we also need some help with insurance companies on prior authorizations. We're going to need some help from CMS to help us scale up and be able to be in a position, God forbid, if there's ever, whenever this is over, to be in a position to respond to another potential, you know, pandemic. And we can't be in that position while we're trying to cut costs at the same time. And I think that it doesn't mean that we can't run our businesses efficiently and profitably, but at the same time provide amazing care. But I just think that COVID's also going to open up even people who survive. Unfortunately, if they've had severe lung infections, are going to be dealing with damaged lungs for the rest of their lives. And, you know, people like, oh, they survived, but people don't realize these people are going to need to be both on oxygen, and some people are going to need to be on home ventilation potentially for the rest of their lives. So these are things that I think as a country, like, we need to be banging down the doors of our congressmen and CMS and saying, guys, like, this is an urgent need. Like, we need the government to step up here. And obviously, that's something that we all can do by contacting our legislators and congressmen and CMS to try to get some change.
Well, Josh, hopefully not just the respiratory providers listening, but all the providers out there realize the urgency here and get on the phones with their representatives and their senators to ensure that we get some streamlined access to the sorts of resources that these patients are going to need.
Yeah, thanks, David, for your time. And you know, we all have a responsibility, especially now with the emergency and around COVID. And my hats go out to everybody, all HME providers that are doing their part, and their staff and their teams that are sacrificing everything to make this happen. So hats off to you guys.
Thanks so much, Josh, for taking the time. I know you've got to be absolutely hopping, so really appreciate it.
Thanks again to Josh Parnas at Adapt Health for sharing a lot of what he's implemented to help his oxygen patients and staff stay safe and to ensure that patients keep getting served. I'm hoping that what he outlined can help other respiratory providers out there. Moreover, I hope that everyone listening will take heed to Josh's call to action to reach out to your members of Congress and ask for relief from competitive bidding for respiratory during this time, as well as help from CMS and insurance companies when it comes to prior authorization, and to finally convince lawmakers and CMS that COVID-19 is demonstrating that HME is a critical part of the respiratory care continuum. Okay, with all that, I think we'll close things up for this episode. That said, our COVID-19 coverage is going to continue next week. In fact, we have a big one coming up with Ty Bello of Team at Work. Ty went around the industry interviewing a ton of providers to start to see some common COVID-19 protocols starting to emerge. I think that one's going to be really good. That is going to be sponsored by the folks over at Playmaker Health, so shout out to them. And okay, before I sign off, don't forget to rate and review the HME Business Podcast. And please, if you haven't already, make sure to click the subscribe button so that you get every new episode. Remember, you keep listening and we'll keep posting. And if you want to stay on top of everything that's happening in the industry, make sure to check out the HME-business.com website and subscribe to eSource, our weekly e-newsletter service there. And if you haven't done so, make sure to subscribe to the print magazine there as well. Again, that's HME-business.com. Of course, you can follow us on social media. We're at HME Business on both Facebook and Twitter, and I'm at Post Acute News on Twitter. Lastly, if you have any feedback, suggestions, or requests, don't be afraid to reach out to me via Twitter. Again, that's at Post Acute News, or you can hit me up via email at dkopf@1105media.com. Thank you all very much for listening. The HME industry has gone through a ton, so I am convinced that we'll get through COVID-19. And in the meantime, goodbye until the next HMEB podcast.